This is Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Welcome, everyone. It is Bob, Dave, and Moore right here on 710 ESPN Seattle. Once again, we've got our buddy Michael Bumpus in with us for the rest of the week for the vacationing Jim Moore. We got our other buddy Curtis Rogers on the board, who will be a newlywed after this weekend. So let me just start the show by congratulating our good friend Curtis Rogers on the upcoming nuptials this weekend.
Thanks, Bob. Yeah, it's a lot sooner than we had anticipated, but, you know, with all that's going on, we figured, let's not wait around.
See, Rog, you're going to be a good husband and a good parent someday.
Well,
you're a good
you.
Man.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Just get used to saying yes, dear. Yes, dear.
Michael, stop it, Michael. Come on, that's very cynical of you.
I do appreciate.
We won't say what I said though in the beginning.
Yeah, I was going to say it.
Not safe for air.
I like the advice Dave Wyman was giving Curtis off the air before the show. It's about saving money. I think we could just say that. I'll just
finances.
Leave it that way. But good stuff. And pay attention to these two guys. They're married, Curtis. I can't offer you anything. I've got a dismal track record. So you listen to Dave, you listen to Bump, you're going to be just fine. And in all seriousness, congratulations, you and Brenna, two of our favorite people. So just really, really an awesome thing, man. So congrats on that. Good to have you with us today. We got a big show coming up. We got John Clayton, as we do every day at 4:30. Sam Monson will join us at 4:30. You'll want to stay tuned for that conversation from Pro Football Focus, get into some of the analytics and, you know, Russell Wilson being one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL and things like that that I know 12s love to hear. And then coming up at 5 o'clock, Mariners Legend. We've been doing it all week at celebrating Mariners Legend Week with different interviews of different Mariners Hall of Famers and all-time greats across all of our shows. And today, 5 o'clock, Jamie Moyer will join us on the program. So looking forward to that conversation. But we had Russell Wilson being the latest to conduct the video press conference, if you will. They both spoke, Russell Wilson and Pete Carroll, they both spoke about a lot of different things. The George Floyd murder, obviously, and the protests going on. It's just interesting to hear. You know, Russell's a guy that often is accused of being robotic and he doesn't say anything. He's Mr. PC. He's Mr. Cliche. Although whatever you want to say about Russell, that's fine. But it's interesting to hear him when he is truly invested in something, and you just hear a different take. You hear a different part of his personality come out. And I think you heard it if you had a chance to hear much of what he had to say. And we've got some cuts, and we'll see if it comes through in the cuts. But cut number one, Russell just talking about, you know, obviously the murder of George Floyd and just the pain in his heart right now.
This is a super emotional time, I think, for a lot of people. I know for me and C, and, my heart hurts. Like I said in my, my letter to you guys and to everybody, is my heart hurts because I see my kids, I see a man get murdered on the street, and it's pretty heavy. It's pretty heavy to watch somebody get murdered like that or killed. And I think that ultimately, brings a lot of pain. It's a lot of pain, history in America. There's a lot of, in my opinion, hate in America. There's a lot of division, and it's something that, I pray that, we can be better as people. I pray, that decisions are made to justify this situation and many other ones that have happened in the past, and whatever else happens, and hopefully nothing else happens in the future. But if something else does, I hope that there can be a precedent for stuff like this happening. What's happening, and some of this police brutality is staggering, and honestly, it's not something I understand fully. It's pretty emotional just to watch some of the videos. And I think about even in Seattle, my home, watching some of the things that are happening there. It's pretty heavy. And so I don't have all the answers. Sometimes I feel like I always normally have some answers for you guys, but I don't have all the answers. But the answers I do know is that is that it's important that we understand that, you know, me being an African American, being black is a real thing in America. It's a real thing in the sense of, you know, the history and the pain, and even my own family personally, my great great grandparents were slaves and everything else. And so there's a lot of history there. And I think that, what I'm praying for is that we learn how to love, we learn how to communicate, we learn how to overcome, we learn how to, to try to, you know, have perspective. You know, I know for us as a team, we've been having a lot of conversations. A lot of the guys, we've been spending a lot of time talking, and, you know, and I think, we've been, and as you guys know, obviously, you know, with our team, we talk a lot, you know, we get to communicate a lot in different ways and try to figure out, you know, how do we make this world a better place? How do we make our communities better? How do we, even as teammates, how do we make sure that we, you know, treat each other always with respect and love and care and understanding, you know, and just try to grow. And, you know, for me, you know, when you think about the idea of Black Lives Matter, they do matter. And the reality is that me as a black person, you know, people are getting murdered on the street. People are getting shot down, and the understanding that, you know, it's not like that for every other race. It's like that in particular, you know, for the black community. And, you know, I think about, you know, my stepson, I think about, you know, my daughter, I think about our new baby boy on the way. And it's kind of staggering. It's staggering to watch these things happen right in front of our faces. And so I have a heavy heart right now. And I think, you know, like I said, I don't have all the right answers or anything. And to be honest with you, I don't even want to talk about football right now. You know, that's the thing, that I don't even know what that looks like down the road or anything else. And I think that none of that matters. I can't compare football to life and what, you know, black community is going through right now. And, you know, what I think is right. I think that people should have the ability to peacefully protest and to be able to, you know, express, you know, their frustration, their hurt and their pain, you know, and, you know, and I don't believe in the extreme amount of violence that's going on. And even, you know, when people are getting pulled over, I saw a video of a couple get pulled over the other day, and I think, and just, you know, pulled out of their car while they were just trying to get, you know, dinner, and just, completely brutally, you know, taken advantage of. That hurts my heart, you know, to see, you know, young girl get maced, and to see all these things happen. And, you know, it's not going to be me that's going to be able to fix it. It's not going to be just one person. It's going to be all of us. It's going to be everybody being able to communicate and everybody being able to talk. And I fundamentally believe that it's important that we understand that, this has been going on for, you know, 400 plus years, and, it's a real issue. And, so anyways, I just wanted to, let you guys know, I really don't want to talk about football. You know, and I think there's a time and place for everything. The God that I believe in, the Jesus that I believe in, you know, has sacrificed for us all. And I think that at the end of the day, you know, for me, you know, I want to love like Jesus did, you know, I want to be able to care like Jesus did. And hopefully, me see and my family and everybody else that I can hopefully have an influence on, you know, can continue to grow with me and grow with us and everybody else. So, you know, like I said, I don't want to talk about football. I think about the pain of George. I think about Ahmaud. I think about Breonna. I think about these people that have been, you know, hurt the way and murdered. And it's just, it's a lot of pain on my heart right now.
There you go. There's a bit of what Russell Wilson had to say in his video, meeting with the media today, and again, a different side of Russell. Now, whether people are going to, you know, agree with him or not, disagree with what he's saying, or I don't want to hear it, this is an uncomfortable topic for a lot of people. You know, this kind of, when it comes to race and equality and justice, there are a lot of people that get really uncomfortable and they want to put their fingers in their ears and just tell me about football. Tell me about, you know, going the nine route. Tell me about, you know, the offensive line. They just don't want to hear it. But it's, you can't affect change unless you wade into the tough conversation. And I think it's worth it. I think it's worth it. And I know it's uncomfortable, but it's not supposed to be easy. It's not supposed to be comfortable. And I appreciate, you know, those that weigh in, they have different perspectives and want to engage in a civil way. I can respect that. We don't all have to be on the same way of thinking, and some people change the way they think, but I think things like this are truly important. And in the end, you look back and go, man, yeah, I appreciate that Russell stood up and said that. I appreciate that this guy that I look up to as an athlete or an actor or a musician or a politician or whoever, you know, made the choice to have that tough conversation.
Yeah, I think this is just a different time right now. So, and a lot of people want sports as an escape, and I'm with that. You know, I get that part of it, but it's just not now. I mean, it's just not really an option right now. So, you know, you talked about Russ and how he was, you know, kind of robotic in the beginning, but you know, he was a kid. He was just a kid coming in, trying to say the right thing. He's in a leadership position, and he's trying to, you know, say all the right things. And so, yeah, I just thought he's handled his entire career perfectly. I mean, and now we're starting to see a little bit more about who he is. And yeah, it was very heartfelt, and you could see he was about on the verge of tears the entire time. And I thought it was, you know, I've been a church guy my whole life, and him talking about that part of it and bringing us together, I just thought was really good to hear. So, and a lot of people aren't, but that's fine. That's who he is. And so, yeah, I really enjoyed hearing Russ. I guess I didn't really know what to expect going in, because like he said several times throughout, you know, and he was almost like apologetic about the fact that he didn't really want to talk about football. You know, he really wanted to talk about what's going on. And I, you know, if somebody would have cut into, hey, so who do you think is going to be your number three receiver this year? It would have been entirely off topic and not really what this whole thing was about. So it was good to hear from Ross. He's just a great leader, man. We heard from two of the great leaders on this team, Bobby Wagner and Russell Wilson, over the last few days.
Yeah. The bad thing about what Russell did is that he had to do it. He had to even talk about that. You know what I mean? Like, that's the only negative I got from that, honestly. The positive I got from it was we got to see Russell without a script. I'm not saying that Russell reads from a script, but you can almost predict what a post-game interview is going to be like with Russell and a lot of football players, right? There are the cliches, the key terms that you're going to hear throughout an interview when you interview a football player. That was one of the few times where I felt like I was hanging on to every word because I didn't really know what was going to be said after it, you know, whereas after a game, all the defense played well, we got to do better on third downs. And, you know, you hear all those things, you know, what's coming. So I just appreciated the vulnerability. And I think that's what kind of makes people uncomfortable, is that you have to be vulnerable in these situations. And me as a man, even as a black man, like my wife tells me all the time, like, you got to be more vulnerable. You know, my whole life I've been taught, you know, be tough, you know, suck it up, keep it in, you know. And as I've gotten older, as she's kind of held my hand through this process, I become more vulnerable. And I think that's what scares people. No one wants to be vulnerable to the masses. Now, to your significant other, to your family, there's times, you know what I mean? But I just really appreciate it. The rawness and the realness of that conversation. Even if you don't agree with what he was saying, that was real. That's really how he felt, and you should tip your hat off to that.
Yeah, it's good to hear. It's really good to hear. Pete Carroll, who I think you couldn't ask for a better coach or better leader in this situation if you're talking about your team, your organization, and the face of it outside of a player. Pete Carroll, man, I just think he's got the perfect temperament just to help guys get through it. You know, if people are just to have a conversation, just to set the right environment for the guys to really, really be vulnerable, as you just said, Bump. And I think Seattle's lucky in that sense to have a guy like Pete. And here he is, cut number two from his Flying Coach podcast, talking about trying to have these tough conversations.
I know the white guys on in my staff, as you said, we have a bunch of guys on both sides of the table here that have different issues and backgrounds. We can't live with an oblivious way of looking at this. We can't do that. It's the privilege that, like you said, Pop, white people have. There's this living in oblivious to what's going on. That ain't okay. And so I'm trying to convey that to my guys, that we see it that way, and then we're trying to learn from each other and see if we can move ahead, together.
Yeah, and I think he was speaking with Greg Popovich, who was a guest on that podcast, but trying to have those conversations. And then cut number three, trying to set it up where guys can again, not to lean on what you said, Bump, too much, but be vulnerable and just talk about what's in their heart.
So we have a kind of a setup makeup where we can really visit and let guys speak their hearts and talk about, how this is impacting them and how it's affecting them. And so that we could all share in everybody's stories, that's the process that we went through, we've been here before, and we've been through this before. For my younger players, the guys that are the rooks, that are coming in, it's an opportunity for them to hear from our leaders. And we have marvelous guys that speak on behalf of the communities and speak on behalf of their families and speak on behalf of themselves as teammates. They show the way for younger guys, how they can speak and talk, and it's okay in our environment to communicate.
Dave, I don't know how you feel about it. I know you touched on, hey, I was in those locker rooms and I would hear these things, but I now have a different perspective on what was being said, in years later. You kind of take in what they said and view it differently. I think he's really setting up such a great environment, as he said, for the rooks, the youngs coming in, and maybe they get there a little quicker. Maybe their minds are changed, or they're just exposed to something different a little quicker because of the environment that Pete Carroll is able to foster them.
Yeah, well, and I was going to say, Bump, when you get sort of mushier, the older you get, the mushier you get, the more you become more emotional. That's called low T, basically, is what that is. So I just wanted to explain that. Just trying to throw some comic relief in. But no, it's really cool the way Pete's so open about it. And we heard from Russ today, and I don't know if we have that clip, but he said that, guys like Will Dissly and Luke Wilson, the white players were coming and saying, what do you need from me? What would help? What should we do? And I thought that was really good. And Pete's been always very open about that stuff. And that's kind of how I've felt lately. We've heard from you, Bump. We've heard from Ray. I've reached out to a couple of my buddies from college, and just talking about, listening instead of just hearing things and being empathetic and those kinds of things. And I just don't think that there's a team. So I think you asked the question, Bob, earlier, that is this a good opportunity? Could the positive that comes out of this be that this team really comes together? And I think it is. And the guy that leads that is Pete Carroll. He's just I just think the best. It's one of my regrets. I had some great coaches. Some I didn't care for that much, but I wished I could have played for Pete, really. And the guy that is most like him from my coaching tree that I had was Paul Wiggin. Paul Wiggin, who recruited me at Stanford and coached me for 2 years there. And him and Pete, strangely enough, were friends. They're buddies. They were roommates when they were coaching together. I think it was in Minnesota. And so, yeah, he was just that kind of, players coach. There weren't many players coaches when I played, but Chuck Knox wasn't a players coach. He wasn't coming up and asking guys how they're doing and everything. And it's changed quite a bit. And now you've got, I think, maybe the best coach in the league, the most empathetic, the one that's going to understand this whole thing the most and bring his team together because of it.
Yeah. Well, Dave, one of the texters said, it's because, the kids make me mushy, especially the daughters. And I can second that. My daughter's got me. She's made me super mushy. So that definitely helps.
There you go.
I mean, I wouldn't want to play for any other coach in this moment, right? In this 6 to 8 months that we've been in, I wouldn't want to play for any other coach. Now, I know more about Pete Carroll than I do about other coaches, but he just seems like the type that is not going to restrict people from speaking out. Who you're not, he's not going to look down on guys for speaking out, whether it be a message he agrees with or he doesn't agree with. And I think that's where we kind of lose people. Some people just tune out. As soon as you start talking about stuff they don't agree with, they tune out, you know? And that is the struggle right there. Can you listen to someone talk and try to understand them and not agree with them? It doesn't mean you don't like them as a person. It doesn't mean you think they're a bad person, that they're evil. No, disagreements are going to happen. So just giving guys a platform to get their voice out there and get their message out and just be heard and be felt, I think that's key. No one, we're never all going to be on the same page. That's just not going to happen. But that doesn't mean that we can't work towards something to make this life in general as fair as possible for everybody, no matter black, white, man, woman. It doesn't matter. All everyone wants to do is be happy, you know, just live a happy, healthy life. And it's going to take all of us. So let's get going.
Yep. I'm with you. We're not here long, man. We're not here long. You gotta make it count, make it as pleasurable and become as happy as you possibly can, because it really, really goes quick. I never thought I'd be sitting here at 32 years old doing a show like this, but here I am. Drew Brees is in the news. We're not going to ignore that. We're going to get to it, but we're coming up against the clock. So right now we're going to take two.
It's time to take two. Brought to you by Infinity of Tacoma at Fife.
Take two.
ESPN's Adrian Wojnarowski reports the NBA's Board of Governors intends to approve a league proposal on a 22-team format to restart the season in Orlando, Florida. The vote will take place during tomorrow's league conference call.
Just in reading some of the things around this, it feels like it's going to go forward, that we're going to have NBA, and I'm still an NBA fan. I've talked about, you know, I don't follow it nearly as closely as I used to because we just don't really talk about it much here, but being as really nothing is happening right now, I'm excited for it. I'm just kind of curious to look into the future years down the road and how we're going to view this season. If they do get underway and it is that playoff format and they crown a champion, are we going to go, yeah, those were weird circumstances. I mean, yeah, okay, so the Lakers were the champs or whoever, but it wasn't a real season. I'm just curious. Right now I'm going to appreciate it. I'm just wondering if down the road we're going to look at it and have a mental asterisk next to it.
Well, I'm with it, man. Get going. And then, you know, there's going to be some trial and error. And I said this yesterday. The NFL is tremendously benefited by these guys going first. And I know we're about to talk about the MLB as well. But, you know, some of the mistakes that get made and some of the things that can be corrected. But, you know, look, if they do make mistakes and with the NBA and some things go wrong, you know, you've got to kind of support them in going forward and trying to get everything back going again. And it's going to be difficult, but I'm excited for it.
Yeah, it's all about who's going to jump in the pool first. You know, it's the pool's not heated, it's kind of cold, no one really knows what it's going to feel like. Who's going to jump in first? And it feels like the NBA is probably the more progressive league when it comes to the four major sports in this country. So I wouldn't be surprised if they do it. I'm eager for some sports as well. And Bob, if the Lakers win it, it's legit. If anyone else wins it, it doesn't count. just for the Bucks.
Gotcha.
Major League Baseball has rejected the Players Association proposal for a 114-game season and have opted not to send a counteroffer. The league said it has started talks about playing a shorter season without fans, and they are ready to discuss additional ideas with the union.
Baseball's on the verge of blowing it. I mean, I understand that. I'm not trying to say guys should just take no money and be happy with it and do it for the, you know, for your country, they need you. But I am kind of saying your country needs you right now. They need something. This is a year where if anybody's going to take, you know, take a bite out of the wallet, this is the year to do it. It's a one-year thing, hopefully, and it's a circumstance nobody could have planned for. Cooler heads need to prevail, because it I don't care how this falls apart. If it falls apart, the owners look terrible, the players look terrible. And this is a game that was desperately clinging to its fan base and desperately trying to find ways to increase its fan base. And this is going to go in the opposite direction. This will be incredibly damaging if they can't get it together.
Well, you know, it's not too surprising to me, too, because the Major League Baseball has always been sort of the standard for, you know, for player representation. So they're probably going to be the toughest. And so hopefully this thing gets worked out.
Yeah, I think the issue is the players just want to see the books. They want to know how much is coming in, how much is going out. It's kind of like the owners are just like, here, take this. And they're not being transparent. I think if both sides were really transparent about what they want and what they expect, then this thing could get done faster and without a bunch of drama. But I don't think the owners are ever going to be that transparent. And I don't think the players are ever going to trust the owners because of that. Therefore, there's a big opportunity for them to mess this whole thing up.
Oh, man. I really hope cooler heads prevail. This could be really, really ugly for baseball. All right, coming up, Brock Cuer told Danny and Gallant yesterday that Jadeveon Clowney not being signed is because of his problematic knee, not the sports hernia surgery he had in the offseason. We'll talk more about that coming up with Bob, Dave, and Moore. Michael Bumpus in for Jim Moore this week on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
We've got our guy Michael Bumpus sitting in with us today and the rest of the week for the vacationing Jim Moore. John Clayton will join us at 4 o'clock. And we touched on this briefly with John yesterday. I saw this note that Brock Huard was on with Danny and Gallant. And they were talking about Jadeveon Clowney, which, again, I feel like we haven't given him enough attention lately, Dave. We spent the better part of, felt like 3 months bringing him up every single day. But there's not been a lot of discussion. But he did bring up something that I found odd, in that we all think about his injury history, but we're thinking about his recent injury history, the core injury, the sports hernia, whatever he was dealing with that he had to have surgery for in the offseason. According to Brock, anyway, cut number 5, that's not the problem. It's his knee that's driving down the value.
The bottom line with Jadeveon Clowney, and the reason no one in this market will give him a long-term deal, is he has physically damaged goods. And he has a knee in particular that's just tremendously problematic. If you are a company run by a salary cap and have X number of millions of dollars that you get to spend in your organization, there is just not an organization that is going to give a long-term deal and guaranteed 8-9-figure guarantees to a player that has as problematic a knee as Jadeveon Clowney has.
Now, that's interesting because we knew about the microfracture when he came into the league. We had heard about that, but it feels like you hadn't heard anything until now. It was about the core injury and now his demands. How much does he want versus what he's actually being offered? We know the Browns were going to offer him a decent amount of money. The Dolphins wanted to sign him last year to a bunch of money, and he turned that down. So it's not as if he hasn't had suitors out there. But it's interesting. I don't know if you guys saw anything, you know, just in the way of his knee. I was in that locker room after every home game. I didn't iced up on the knees or anything. I don't know. It's an interesting comment from Brock. What's your response to that?
Well, I trust Brock, first of all. I think, you know, he's probably got some inside information there. I got to say, you know, the microfracture surgery, I had that 1 year by a really good doctor, and it took a long time. And I'd wished that I hadn't had it. But, it can be a problem. And I remember it bothering me for the entire season. So, you know, it's kind of what I suspected that there had to have been something like this. The only other thing it could have been was that he's not a good guy. And I have not heard that at all. And as a matter of fact, his teammates loved him for playing through injury. So, I thought this has to be something. But, yeah, I didn't see anything, Bump, where it looked to me like, oh, yeah, look at that guy. He's playing on a leg and I can't say that. It's something the coaches used to say all the time. But, you know, in other words, you know, this guy's playing on a bad knee. Yeah, I know. It's a family show. But, look, I didn't see any of that. So that's why it was so surprising. And like I said, I think Brock, you know, I don't think he would say this unless he had some pretty good information.
Yeah, Dave, I didn't see anything with the knee. I mean, even when he had his core injury, I felt like he still played at a high level. So to hear this is interesting, and I'm with you. If Brock says it, he probably has some intel with that. And I just think of Clowney, and granted, we would love for him to be back in Seattle. I just feel bad for the dude, man. I mean, this was supposed to be the time where he makes his money. He's young, he's in his prime. Then the pandemic hits. He can't work out for teams, and now rumors are flying around. You know, maybe it's his knee, maybe it's the core. Like, who knows, man? It's just an unfortunate situation for such a good player. But the flip side of it is, with him still being on the market, it gives me hope that he will be here in Seattle, because Seattle is the one organization that really knows what type of shape his body is in. So to hear that his knee may be an issue is unfortunate. I hope it all works out with that. I hope he has a long, healthy career. But the longer he holds out, the more it looks like Seattle is a spot for him. And selfishly, I wouldn't mind seeing him lace him up and playing CenturyLink again.
Yeah, one more cut from Brock talking about the Texans didn't sign Clowney to the extension. The Seahawks are willing to take on that injury risk for 1 year anyway.
You know what they did not do? Sign him to an extension. And then when he became available, what did the rest of the league say? The Dolphins were kind of interested, but we'll take him. We'll take him on a 1 year flyer. And you know what, Bill O'Brien, you're going to eat half of his deal, and we will really love that. And we'll give you a third round pick, and man, we'll make that thing work. And absolutely, for a season, we will take that on. But then when he wants a multi-year deal with generational millions guaranteed, the Seahawks say no, just as the Texans said no, just as the market the year before said no.
Now, and I'm not sure entirely what he was referring to when he said when the move was made, the league said, I remember everybody going, wait, the Texans were paying how much of his salary, and the Seahawks gave up what? They gave really? Wow. Barkevious Mingo? Really? I mean, it was – I remember sort of a sense of shock and surprise that you got a player of that caliber for what you gave up, with all due respect to the players they gave up, and the amount of money that Houston ate in the process. So I'm not exactly sure what that was referring to, but I remember people being surprised and feeling like, wow, the Seahawks just fleeced the Texans.
Yeah, well, what if, 2 years from now we find out it was the other way around? Because, we talked to John McClain down in Houston, and first of all, could not be a more excellent guy. Well, both guys, really, when they lost Barkevious Mingo and Jacob Martin, but John McClain talked about how Jacob Martin is becoming, has the potential to become a really good pass rusher. I think he had 3 or 3.5 sacks last year. And wouldn't that be odd if all of a sudden, I can't say that, like, for a 1 year deal, it was a bad deal. That's for sure. Because, again, they didn't have to pay. They paid, what, 7 of the $16 million, I think it was. But, you did give up a couple of players who are fairly valuable, especially Jacob Martin down the road. And, yeah, it's just odd how all of a sudden this is looking like, wow. I mean, I still think you got a great year out of Jadeveon Clowney. I mean, he made a lot of really good plays. But, I was kind of – I can't remember if it was you or Michael that said, I feel bad for this kid. Like, I really wanted him to take that Browns offer because I want the best for him. He's such a talented player. But, I think we're all in the mode of, oh, man, I hope he doesn't sign anywhere else. But now I'm starting to look at that going, man, if they offered you a multi-year deal – Why wouldn't you take it, man? You gotta get it while you can in the NFL.
It's almost like it's all starting to make sense, right? Especially now. I mean, we're gonna speculate. That's what we're here to do, right? It's fun. But it's almost like, okay, maybe the Texans knew his body wasn't gonna hold up, and maybe the Seahawks were banking on him just buying into this culture and wanting to be here. So now it's like, the Hawks are in a weird position to where they're like, okay, well, that didn't work. He did have a good year, but we're not going to be able to give him the money that he wants. And he goes out looking, he goes out searching. So, man, we should just call Clowney and see if he wants to come in and have a talk about this, huh? Because that'd be much easier. I mean, there's so much.
I'm sure nobody's approached
this guy right now. Yeah, not at all. But, I'd love to talk with the guy. Clowney, if you're listening, come holler at us, man. We love to talk.
Yeah, we're here for you. We've got open ears and open hearts. We're going to sit here and take in whatever you've got to tell us, man. We look forward to that conversation. A reminder, all this week, 710 ESPN Seattle is celebrating Mariners Legends Week with interviews with Mariner Hall of Famers and all-time greats across all of our shows all week long. So don't miss a single moment. You can follow along on air, online, or listen with the 710 Sports app. And today at 5 o'clock, we've got Mariners legend Jamie Moyer joining us on the program. So tune in for that. Meanwhile, the NBA won't make make it official until tomorrow, but it's reportedly ready to resume play starting July 31st. We'll discuss that and what it could mean for the other leagues. That's coming up with Bob, Dave, and more with Michael Bumpus in on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and More on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Coming up at the top of the hour, we'll talk some football with the Professor John Clayton, as we do every day here with Bob, Dave, and Moore. We got Michael Bumpus in with us this week for the vacationing Jim Moore. And some good news, maybe more. Maybe it's better news for Bumpus because I know he's a big NBA fan. I'm a big NBA fan, not quite as big as I used to be, but still like it. The NBA is expected to pass a vote to return to play July 31st. Now, the plan includes 13 Western Conference teams, 9 Eastern Conference teams, 8 regular season games. So just 8 regular season and a possible play-in tournament for the 8th seed in the playoffs. So the top 16 teams in the East and West conferences will be joined by teams currently within 6 games of 8th place in the 2 conferences. So you're looking at New Orleans, Portland, San Antonio, Sacramento, Phoenix, and Washington. This is, again, according to sources. So there's a lot to the plan. We'll see how it all comes out and how it's viewed. But just the idea that a major sport is getting ready to return in some way, shape, or form, and it's a different form than we've ever experienced, but it gives me hope. It's very encouraging to me just in terms of, you know, baseball's got to work out their financial. That's baseball is about the money. It's not about can we effectively play and test everybody and do it safely. That doesn't seem to be the issue anymore. It's about finances. So this gives me hope for football, college football, NHL returning. I feel like this, whether you hate the NBA or love it, as a sports fan, you've got to feel like this is okay. I have hope. This is optimistic.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. At the end of February, before the lockdown, I was in Salt Lake City and watched the Jazz play.
That's right. Your vacation.
Yeah, that's right. And I really enjoyed it. I just had a great time at the game. It was so fun to be there in person, and just made me think about the few Sonics games that I had gone to before they left. But yeah, it's gonna be fun. Now we know that that Bump is a huge Lakers fan. I really liked watching the Celtics play, and I think they ended up beating the Jazz that night. But yeah, who's your team now that there's no Sonics? We know Bump. How about you, Bump?
I kind of root for players. It was the Celtics initially when the Sonics initially left because, A, they had Ray Allen there, who I loved, and Doc Rivers was one of my favorite coaches, but one of my all-time favorite players was Kevin Garnett. So I rooted for the Celtics, and then once the big three broke up there, now I just kind of root for players. I don't really have a team per se. So, yeah, I'm still a Durant guy because Durant reps Seattle, and he wears the Sonics gear, and he talks about the NBA being here in Seattle. And I went to that preseason game out here with the Golden State Warriors and the Sacramento Kings, and it was a frenzy in a building for a preseason NBA game. So don't tell me there's no appetite in Seattle for the NBA because that was a preseason game, and that building was buzzing. You could not get a ticket. It was awesome. So I just tend to root for players at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sad that I didn't get a chance to see the Sonics play. When I got picked up by the Hawks, it was 08, and it was either their last year or they had already left. And I missed out, man. I missed out on young Russell. Was Russell on the team then? And Durant was on the team?
No, they drafted Westbrook, but he never played in Seattle.
But never played. But Durant was on the team, correct?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Durant was signing. Yeah, so I missed out on that, man. And I hear stories about the Sonics. I watched them growing up, obviously, because I'm a Laker fan. But the way that Sonics fans talk passionately about their team, it kind of made me not like the Oklahoma City Thunder. My brother-in-law is one of the biggest Sonic fans I've ever met, and I've kind of inherited that hate for OKC. Right? And, you know, I guess I've been up here long enough. I can say that I don't really agree with OKC right about now.
Yeah, and Dave, you were here during the time. I mean, there was Bump in the 90s, the mid 90s, with George Karl and it was Gary Payton and Sean Kemp and Detlef Schrempf and Hersey Hawkins, and I mean it was such an awesome group, and that the Sonics owned this town. they owned it the way the Seahawks own it now. It wasn't the Mariners and it wasn't the Seahawks. It was the Sonics. And they went to the finals against the Bulls and they lost 4-2 against one of the greatest teams in the history of the NBA in Chicago at that time. But it was Sonics mania in this town at that time. And I'll never forget that. That was right before I got into sports radio and just being able to go and see those guys play. And you, the way you'd look forward to watching those games on TV and being able to go to a game here and there, it was just amazing, man. It was just take the Seahawks fanaticism that exists in the city now with the 12s and how everybody's just so fired up about it and transfer that to the Sonics. That's what it was like here. It was awesome.
Yeah, and think about that. I mean, that was really a huge lull for the Seahawks at that point. I mean, in 1990, I think we almost made the playoffs. I want to say we were either 8-8 or 9-7 or something. But then, you know, after that, it just, there wasn't much to root for. So the Sonics, like you said, Bob, they were the kings of the city. So, yeah, it's encouraging to hear this. And, you know, hopefully we don't see a spike or anything with the coronavirus and that they're able to handle it well. And had a couple of players, you know, two of those guys that I went and watched, I'm trying to remember the name of the other guy with the Jazz, but Rudy Gobert ended up getting the coronavirus, right? And yep. He was the one that touched all the mics and everything, and everybody was all over him because, yeah, nobody really knew that much about it, and he was trying to make light of it. So, but I think he ended up giving a bunch of money to some of the, you know, the people that work at the stadium and stuff like that. So, but not that that makes up for it, but yeah, it'll be interesting to see how this works out for them because yeah, the NFL is just going to be taking notes and same with Major League Baseball as well.
Do you think, and I think Maura asked a good question on the show sheet here, does it provide a sense of urgency for baseball to work their thing out? And I think we make it very simplistic, like, yeah, just get together, let cooler heads prevail, work it out. That's a very simple way of looking at it. I know there's a lot to it, and there's a lot of money on the line in both senses for the owners and the players, and you've got to make it as mutually palatable as you possibly can, or, you know, suffer the least amount of pain financially as you can. I understand it. You just hope that the greater good will enter their mind and understanding the world, the sports world is watching. And this is an opportunity for a sport that in the estimation of a lot of people is dying and it's an old person sport and the younger generation doesn't care about it. And this is your chance to capture people. And I just really hope they do not let that slip by. I really hope they are able to take advantage of what would be considered a goodwill gesture in the eyes of a lot of people, understanding that they're both going to lose financially. Players are not going to get their full salaries. Owners are not going to make anywhere near the money they normally make. Everybody loses in that sense. But I hope that they can find a way to come to an agreement financially, because I just can't even imagine how devastating it'll be if the NBA comes back and hockey comes back and the MLS is back, as a texter reminded me, and football and every other sport comes back. But here's baseball. Nah, we couldn't figure it out. Sorry, no season. How is that? How are you going to look? How is that going to be received?
That's a bad look right there, you know, and people are going to look back at this time. You know, it's going to be in the history books one day, right? 20 years from now or something, when they write the new textbooks, and they're going to talk about this time. And I think that if there's any type of pressure that will make the owners kind of get off that pedestal a little bit, it'd be one, because they love the fans and they love the game. Two, because of the history books, man. You know, who's going to be the league to really break the ice and jump out there? Which commissioner is going to be? It's all about ego. I mean, you throw some ego in there, you give an owner, someone with power, an opportunity to be remembered in history in a certain light. I would think that would kind of push them to get things going again. You have to find the right chord to string, or whatever that saying is. You got to find that right chord to make them really be like, okay, let's cut a deal. Let's get this thing done. Do we want to be remembered? How do we want to be remembered? Do we want to help this country out in a time of need? There's something that is going to strike with these owners to make them, and players as well, to make them just want to get back out there and compromise. What it is, I'm not sure, but they got to keep searching. Both sides keep negotiating, keep going at it, and just try to find a way to get this thing done.
I like the way you put that, Bump, you know, talking about, you know, the history books, because, you know, we talked about this with baseball. I mean, the A's, And really just in general, like, how are you going to come out of this thing? Are you going to come out of this thing like being proud of yourself? Did you do, you know, try to do the right thing and help other people out? Or were you greedy? Were you lazy? Did you work hard? All of those things. But I like that perspective because, yeah, you don't want to be on the wrong side of that. I mean, you know, they talk about Major League Baseball. You know, it's like, yeah, remember the A's didn't pay any of their minor league guys and, you know, saved themselves, what, a few hundred thousand dollars or something like that. So
it was barely over a million.
Yeah. So, I mean, that to me is not something that you want to do. Just not just goodwill, you know, because, again, it's business. But, you know, how is your business going to be perceived when you come out of this thing?
All right. Hey, we've got another edition of Mariners Classic tonight at 7 p.m. Ichiro breaks the single-season hits record back in 2004. You're going to want to relive that moment. It's brought to you by Roofers and Waterproofers, Local 54. Well, we got news yesterday that there will be no travel for NFL training camp, so when could we hear more about how the NFL is going to proceed with training camp? We'll talk about that with the professor, and you guys can start texting in your questions for the professor right now if you'd like. 710-710 to the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. We'll talk to John Clayton coming up with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.